Welcome to the DIY Pod, a people podcast for the music business, bringing you meaningful and motivating career conversations. I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of DIY People and Talent, the people consultancy for the music business. In each episode, we'll share with you lovely listeners real career stories from some of the most interesting, inspiring and insightful people I've met over the course of my career. This week's guest is an inspiration, a friend, and a familiar voice that regular listeners will recognise as our very own Anne Frankenstein. Anne's been notably absent from the pod for the last couple of episodes as she's been a busy lady doing all manner of things like being on TV and appearing on Six Music. Anne's a DJ, broadcaster, and amongst other things, she has her very own show on Jazz FM. She is a total boss and we love her. So we're super excited to have her back on the DIY pod. And I won't lie, I am slightly nervous. Welcome back to the DIY pod, Anne.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
Mate, I have missed you so much. It's so good to see you and hear you as always. So you know the drill for today. It's not even like I need to explain to you what we're going to do. So are you ready for some quick fire questions?
Yeah, but I'm usually asking the questions. I'm pretty appalling at answering questions, as you'll find out. Pretty appalling at remembering anything about my career as well. So this is going to be a challenge for you, Sylvia. Right to be nervous.
Oh, God. It's going to be a great episode. Very excited about it. All right, mate. We'll get on to that career story shortly. We'll see how bad you are at answering those questions. But for now, I reckon you're going to ace these ones. So what's the first album that you bought?
Madness. Complete Madness.
And what was the first gig you went to?
Ocean Colour Scene, I think, in Ireland when I was maybe 10 or 11.
You know Ocean Colour Scene are the band that I pretended my first gig, because we all know who my first gig actually was, don't we?
Sylv, I'm pretending too. My first gig was Boyzone, but I went with my sister. I didn't like them. My sister liked them when I went with her.
I thought E17 was bad, but Boyzone is infinitely worse.
Oh, E17 is cool. They were like the edgelords of the boy band scene.
The edgelords, I love it. All right, next question. What was the last show you went to?
I went to see Jazz Jamaica at Royal Festival Hall. It was so good that I wept almost the entire way through it. A jazz band, this huge jazz orchestra covering reggae and ska classics. It was magnificent.
Amazing. What's on repeat at the moment?
That's an awkward question because I listen to all kinds of crap. I usually have my Spotify on shuffle and it's been really hitting a lot of duds lately. It's been giving me like 6 John Denver tracks an hour. Young listeners won't know who that is, and that's probably for the best.
I thought you were going to say Boyzone for a minute then, mate. That really would have been worrying. Okay, and who's the artist that changed your life?
Oh, there's so many. Maybe Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's music has always meant a lot to me. And, you know, he set me up as a lyrics person throughout the rest of my life, I think, when I first heard his music when I was a kid.
You know who introduced me to Bob Dylan? The wonderful Danny Roberts. Yeah. Many moons ago. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing.
And what's your dream lineup, past or present?
Ooh, that's interesting. You know, you have to, I realize these are quick fire questions. I told you I was bad at answering questions. You have to reconcile. I'm very protective over the artists that I love. And I find it difficult sometimes to see the artists that I really love in front of other people because they always end up ruining it somehow with their mobile phones or their chat or whatever it is. So you kind of have to reconcile that with a band that's just great to see at a festival. I would put Jazz Jamaica on that stage because they were amazing. Probably would be good to see Tom Waits. I've seen him once in my life and it was magical. I would like to see him again. Nile Rodgers would be awesome. Anything he does is just, he would be like the closing act as the sun went down, having an out dance to Nile Rodgers. Who else? I don't know. So many people that I'm leaving out. Thelonious Monk, a few jazz guys who are dead. Buddy Rich, that would be incredible. That's probably enough for me. I don't want to wear myself out at this fantasy festival. I'm quite elderly.
I love it. You're not elderly. Please. Seriously, if you're elderly, I'm...
Same age?
No, I'm older. Well, that was brilliant. Thank you. And you were very quick fire, I feel.
Okay.
Although that section often goes on for long, as well you know. Before we get stuck into your career story, you know the drill. We sent you a list of words to pick from, which are your P's for the pod. And you picked proactivity, positivity, and persistence. Tell us why you picked those P's.
I love that list of P's, and I do feel like there are certain ones that are kind of cliched now from people picking them. So I wanted to be a bit different in my choices, but then those were the three that really represented how I feel about what's important in life and in a career in music. Proactivity is just fundamental to everything. You have to be pushing and hustling constantly every day to get what you need to get done, to get in front of the right people, to remind people of who you are. You can't do that without positivity. Positivity is probably the biggest one, really. You almost have to kid yourself sometimes that everything is going really well or that everything's going to work out really well. Optimism, I feel like, is really important and a really underrated thing. You really have to kind of believe that things are going to work out somehow, some way, exactly the way that you want them to. And positivity is obviously a huge part of creating that fantasy to help you get towards your goals. I'm just a positive person anyway, I think. And I just think that's really helpful. You can't have even a drop of pessimism if you're going to work towards having a big career in the music industry or a career doing whatever you want. It's just not going to work. And my third P was persistence. Yeah. Again, I feel like it kind of fits into the same thing as proactivity. There's this sort of fundamental quality people talk about, which is grit, which kind of separates the people who are inclined to give up and the people who are inclined to carry on. And it's that feeling where if someone rejects you or you don't get the answer you want or you feel like something didn't go your way, you take that and you use it as fuel to push yourself forward in life and in work and in everything else. And I am truly one of those people. I feel like one of the reasons why I doggedly pursued a career in radio, a small percentage of the reason why I did that is as an up yours to all the teachers who used to tell me to stop talking in school.
That's the best up yours ever.
I don't know. You kind of have to take that, the sort of negative vibes, and turn them into proactivity. It is so helpful if you think of it that way, especially when your energy is waning. If you can find other ways to fuel your proactivity, that's really important. So yes, my favorite three P's by far.
Fabulous P's. And I think out of those P's, we've got a whole heap of other words, haven't we? We've got grit, resilience, optimism, energy, and what you were talking about when you were saying about sort of taking the knocks. It's almost about like understanding what the feedback is, you know, what is the feedback? What can I do next time differently to get a bit further along in whatever it is that you're doing, which is kind of something I'm very sort of appreciative of. And I know, don't want this to be a smoke blowing fest, but when we started recording the podcast, like genuinely, I wanted to do a podcast for ages. You agreed to do it with me. Circumstances meant that, you know, I met Kiani and we had Kiani in the mix as well, which was amazing. And I think you both gave me feedback as we were going along. You gave me encouragement and it felt very optimistic. And you two gave me great energy. So, you know, all of those things are really, really important, particularly when you're trying to build a career in the music industry, whatever stage you're at. If you're doing something you don't know, it's still understanding that it's possible. It takes a bit of time, but you just got to kind of keep on keeping on, I suppose.
100%. I mean, you have to believe fundamentally that you're going to get there. And it's not even about like, oh my God, yeah, I'm the best and I'm going to do this. Do you know what I mean? Like you're at a spin class or something and shouting slogans at yourself. It's not like that at all. It's just having that goal and thinking, you know, there's a jungle between me and the place that I want to get to. It's not quite clear what the path is yet, but everything that happens as I go along my journey helps me to accumulate things that I'm going to need for when I get there. And so the optimism is just that feeling of like, good things happen, bad things happen, whatever it is, I am going to get to my goal eventually.
Yeah, definitely. And it is about the small wins as well, isn't it? I think it's so easy sometimes to see the end goal and just feel like that's really overwhelming and unreachable. But actually, I mean, I have it in my diary every day at 6 o'clock, daily wins, to remind myself of the small things, because, you know, work is kind of relentless and it's reminding yourself of the small wins. I love that. Thank you so much. Brilliant, brilliant peas. Thank you so much, Anne. Well, should we get stuck into your career story then? You know, the first question. How did you come to realise that you could work in music, or that the actual business side existed, or behind the scenes side potentially existed?
I mean, we know each other from the sort of sideline that my career took when I was in my early 20s. I studied music at university. I got sort of bogged down with mental health issues and I dropped out of uni and somehow I ended up in admin and then in HR. And because I was interested in music, I ended up working for companies like IMG Artists, which is a classical music agency, and then Universal, which is where I met you. And so I kind of not only realized there was a business side, I had experience of working at it as well, which was fascinating and has served me so well in terms of eventually sort of moving more towards the other side of things. So my awareness is kind of probably even deeper. And, you know, that was in, like I say, my early 20s that I started working in HR. So I feel like that knowledge has been there for quite a long time.
So you had quite a long and winding road to get to where you are. And you started in the sort of admin and business side of the industry. And obviously you've moved now into a much more kind of front-facing role, into a talent role. How did you make that step from the business side or the admin side into the talent?
Well, the admin side was always to pay my bills. And then on the side of that, I mean, I started DJing when I was a young teenager and I kind of always kept that up one way or another throughout my teens and while I was working full time as well. And then I started booking more gigs. I started working at like a radio station that was based out of the basement of a pub. And I just completely fell in love with doing radio. Like I say, I've been DJing for a long time. Radio was relatively new to me. I started maybe doing that when I was 23, 24, something like that. And I just, it was one of those things where I knew I was bad at it and that the only way to get better at it was to just keep doing it. And so that's what I did. And I worked full time and I spent the weekends DJing and doing this radio show. So the two things were kind of parallel for quite a few years. They were kind of two separate tranches of my life. And then I had an early midlife crisis and I was like, what am I doing? I don't want to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning every day, which is ironic because now I'm a total morning person. But it was just get me down. The 9 to 5, it was just really becoming more and more obvious that it wasn't what I wanted to do. And a friend of mine, a contact I'd made through DJing, who I had made, I mean, this is the other thing, like I was just constantly, even subconsciously hustling. Like I met this girl at a New Year's Eve party briefly, and she had a couple of friends who were opening a bar in London who got in touch with me because I'd brought a few records to this New Year's Eve party. So this girl obviously saw me DJing, and when her friends came to London and opened a bar and needed a DJ, she was like, oh, I know a DJ, and sent them my details. That bar ended up doing really well. They ended up opening this real fancy bar in central London, which has been like voted best bar in the world a couple of times. It was just really high end in this hotel. And the owner basically said to me, ask for whatever you want to get paid. They have a lot of money, so they'll ask you what you want to charge. So just tell them. And I thought, I can charge X amount for my DJing. And if I really wanted to, I could quit my full-time job and try and pursue this full-time. So that gave me the opportunity to do that. And then I found myself being a freelance DJ. And then I went on to pursue more DJing and onto radio, but I guess we'll get into that.
We will indeed. So like you say, you kind of had parallel lives, didn't you? You had the daylight job and the non-daylight job. Yeah. So the daylight job was, you know, the HR admin side of things. And then the nighttime work was the DJing side of things. Tell us about the moment that you, because there's then another strand, or there's a number of different strands, isn't there? Because I think I said in the intro, you know, you are a radio presenter. You still DJ. You do continuity. Like we were kind of laughing before we started recording that it's like, how do you even describe what you do? Because it's so many different things that are unconnected in terms of the employers, but are connected in terms of the skills. And that's, I guess, what we call a portfolio career, which a lot more people have these days. It's not always a linear career where one person works for one company for a long period of time. It's people doing different things in a freelance capacity. So if we are putting it in a sort of linear fashion, and then we'll jump back into each of those points. So it started with DJing when you're a teenager. Then you went to uni and you mentioned you had some mental health issues, and we can go back to that to talk about that as well if you want, because yes, mental health is a matter that's very, very close to my heart. Then you do this sort of admin day job, which builds your HR career, which ends up being in the music side of things. Then you're doing those two things alongside each other. What happens when you decide to just jack in the day part of the life? Tell me how that all came about.
It's so funny because it just feels like a totally different life now. I mean, it's not even that I was doing HR and I was completely run ragged and I was so busy and I was like, oh, I just want to try something different. I was bored out of my mind. I was completely unmotivated. And I was just like, I can't just be here chatting with my friends, keeping a chair warm and picking up a paycheck, you know, every month. This can't be my life. And like, I think it was that, you know, when you're in full-time employment and Christmas rolls around, it's like this big sigh of relief. And it's like suddenly, it's like the beginning of December and a couple of days pass and you just cannot take it not being Christmas yet. And you're like, when will it be Christmas yet? When will it be Christmas? I'm going to die if Christmas doesn't come soon. And then it's like Christmas comes and it's this big relief and you're like, oh, thank God. And I just came back after Christmas at this job that I'd been in for, I think, 3 years at that point. And like I say, it wasn't that I was being run ragged. It was a pretty cushy job. But I came back and I was like, I'm miserable. I want that Christmas feeling all the time so I can just do whatever it is that I want to do with my free time, which is rightfully mine. I don't want to be here for 35, 40 hours a week giving my time away, doing something that doesn't feel worthwhile to me. So that was it, really. And it was absolutely terrifying. Like, it's difficult to sort of summon up those feelings now because it all worked out for the best. But like at the time, it felt like I was absolutely jumping off a cliff. I used to cry about it all the time, like not out of sadness, but just out of, I don't know, fear. And it just was a huge kind of emotional shift that it took to finally say to myself, I'm going to jump off this cliff and see what happens. But like I say, financially, it was going to be a big dip for me, but it was manageable. And I was so miserable in my job that I was spending my money on all kinds of stupid, useless crap anyway. So I just thought, if I can be happier, I won't need to be spending all this money and I can have time, which just is so much more of a precious commodity. So yeah, that was kind of the turning point.
I suppose what you're touching on in that point is somewhere between expectation, convention, and purpose. Because it's like the expectation for most people is that they will have a 9-to-5 job. It doesn't fit into what people always feel their purpose is. Your purpose was something different. You know, I know that previously as well, you were in bands, you were making music, you know, if you're DJing, the career that you've gone into now, that's a much more creative kind of outlet. And I suppose if we could try and link the two kind of careers together, you know, part of what you do in HR is to talk to people loads and you have to be able to communicate effectively, which of course you absolutely have to do when you're presenting and when you're interviewing people now. And not saying that, you know, the reason you built this fantastic career that you have now is because at one point you worked in HR, because that's absolutely not the case. But I suppose going back to that point of understanding that people's routes aren't always the sort of straightforward linear path, and actually if you can take certain skills or experiences from any part of that journey, then you know you can kind of, you can move things forward into the area that you do want to move in. So that really was about purpose. It was doing something that was more purposeful and presumably that was better for your well-being, like your overall well-being and your kind of enjoyment of life. Like, no one wants to get up in the morning and dread going to work. That is not the dream by any stretch of the imagination. One of the questions that I get asked more than anything else is the practical tips. Like, how did you actually do that? Like, when you got your first foot in the door at radio, how did you make that happen? And then how did you build that into a tangible career?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, nobody really talks about the practical stuff, because I think when you're looking back in retrospect, you just see everything falling into place and you're like, oh, of course. And then I had that meeting, that fateful meeting with such and such a person who did this for me, not remembering the like 25 meetings that you also had that went absolutely nowhere. So yeah, I was very pragmatic about the whole thing. I mean, obviously money is a thing. I had to sit down and really figure out if it was something that I could afford to do, because I was taking a big, not just a dip in my salary, but my wages were going to become inconsistent, whereas prior to that I had obviously always, you know, had a monthly wage packet. So I had to sit down and figure that out. I had to speak to other freelancers about what to do about tax, which is a very boring but important practical concern. That was really important. Get a recommendation for an accountant. I had to learn about doing my taxes and just budgeting and all of that stuff. I just used to piss my money away and then the month would end and I'd have a whole new load of money in my account and it didn't matter. This was a whole new thing that I had to tackle. I had a friend who happens to be an amazing career coach. And, you know, I was lucky to have her as a friend, but there are some great career coaches out there which people can access. You know, there's plenty of people who are willing to give you career advice and plenty of people who do that professionally. I sat down with her and I asked her, like, what practical things do I need to know? How can I map this out? You know, give myself a good foundation to make this work properly. And I had a couple of sessions with her and that was unbelievably helpful. She gave me a framework to work from, you know, working backwards from like, what is it that you want to achieve? Well, I want to have enough gigs to be able to support myself and I want to be able to move further into this radio thing. So she basically, you know, I think one of the main things that we established was writing down a goal list, you know, thinking about what I wanted to achieve, breaking it down into smaller tranches and making me kind of realize that it was something that I would have to pursue myself. So emailing people, contacting people, speaking to people, making contacts, that was just something that I had to be completely fearless about. So I made hit lists of like different venues in London. I like researched what their music policy was, whether or not I'd be a good fit. I sent out rafts of emails. I put pins in those emails and followed them up sometimes several times. That's the way I've ended up with gigs that I still have and love to this day. You know, and this was like, I'm talking about years ago when I sort of took this approach. And, you know, a couple of years in or a year or so in, I met my lovely boyfriend, Tim, who's also freelance in a different field. He's an illustrator. And we used to sit down and have these things we called business meetings, where every few months we would sit down and say, well, where do we want to be and how do we want to get there? And again, just map out all the small steps it would take to get us there. And that's how the radio thing came about. I'd sort of moved around a little bit, but still doing shows for like community stations and stuff and smaller stations. And, you know, we figured out in terms of commercial radio, and honestly, I think a bit of naivety, if naivety began with P, that would have been on my list. I think in some ways, not knowing everything about how the industry works can sometimes work in your favor, because I very naively was like, I want to move into commercial radio. I want to get paid for doing this. What station would be the best fit for me now, you know? And we boiled that down to Jazz FM. I sent them a demo and I sort of looked at their employee list and I thought, who is the most likely person to listen and give feedback on this demo? To my surprise, this was Chris Gilvear, a man who has helped me so much in radio. It's ridiculous. He picked up on my demo, listened to it and wrote back to me and said, we've no jobs, but like, I'll have a beer with you or whatever. I don't drink. So I had to go and meet him and pretend I drank beer. He still takes the piss out of me. I had two beers and I didn't know where I was after that. But yeah, he gave me some really practical advice. And every time we spoke, he'd give me just a little nugget that made me feel like, if I just ignore all of the things he's telling me about how unlikely it is that he'll be able to give me a job and just stay positive about this one bit where he's saying, well, come and make a demo if you want, kind of thing, you know. So we had this meeting, basically was like, there's no jobs, but like, come and make a demo. You can make it in our studio if you want. I could have made it in the little radio station that I was already comfortable working in, but I thought, I'm going to come in. I'm going to meet all the people I can meet at Jazz FM. I'm going to make my presence known. I'm going to introduce myself to people and I'm going to use their studio and try and make an impression for the time that I'm there making this demo. So when I was making it, and this is a good tip for anyone trying to get into radio, I got an MP3 of like other shows on their station, cut out the jingles, cut out the ad breaks and stuck that into my demo. So it would just be a more believable thing when they listened to it and they liked it. And then eventually someone left and eventually they said, there's a space for you. And I was so terrified. I think I didn't sleep for two nights in a row. But yeah, it was just magic. They gave me a job and then I was there doing weekends for a couple of years, and then a slot opened up where our most popular presenter, Chris Phillips, who was presenting the mid-morning slot 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. who consistently had the best ratings for daytime side of any presenter, he left. And you know, I was a woman. I imagine that had a lot to do with the fact that they picked me, because before then they had solidly men all throughout the day. But yeah, that slot came up and they took a chance on me. I've been in that slot ever since.
That's amazing. And there's so much in there. I was furiously scribbling notes down while you were talking. Going back to the bit where you were talking about yourself and your partner having business meetings and you were just setting yourself some goals. What we're talking about there, and also when you spoke about the career coach, and this is a conversation that I have with people on a daily basis, particularly if they're looking at leaving a permanent job, much like you were, and moving into setting something up for themselves, whether that be freelance, whether that be their own own business, you have to make, another P word, might add it to the list, a plan. You have to have a plan, a tangible plan for how you can achieve those goals. And you start with the absolute basics. Like you said, it's like, right, what do I need for rent? What do I need for my bills? What do I need for food? What's the minimum that I can earn in a month? Like, okay, well, that's the starting point. And I know, Anne, you and I used to be absolute fiends for ASOS orders. I think I cut a lot of that out. Not so many Fred Perry's now in my, well, the same amount of Fred Perry's in my wardrobe, but it's not expanding at such a rate that it used to be. But yeah, it's making that plan for yourself, and it's making small, tangible, achievable goals to get you to where you want to be so that you're not overwhelmed by the big picture. The other thing you did there, and as well, we talk about your plan of, you know, creating a spreadsheet of all the contacts that you needed, contacting those people, putting pins in the emails, following those emails up. That's part of the plan. And leading on from that, you created your own opportunities. You know, there was a person who said, there aren't any jobs, but we can have a chat. And you took that opportunity and they said, you can record your demo and ask, there aren't any jobs. You know, keep repeating the phrase, there aren't any jobs, which you'll hear quite a lot when anyone's looking for work in an industry like music. You know, it's like, there aren't any jobs, but, and ultimately that phrase, there aren't any jobs, but. It's like someone is giving you a tiny little in. What are you going to do with that in? Are you going to run away from it terrified and go, oh no, I think I'll make my demo in the studio that I know and, you know, I won't make eye contact with anyone, blah, 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 blah. Or you go into that environment, you go into the unknown and you go, okay, cool, I'm going to go into that studio. I'm going to talk to as many people. I'm going to capitalize on this opportunity as much as humanly possible and talk to as many people as I can. And, you know, again, another thing I talk about is personal brand, the impression that you leave people with. You know, it's so, so important. You're just building that network. So that's amazing. That's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you're dead right. And there's a... This is how a background in HR has served me so well, because I know, even working in music companies and companies that people are desperate to work in, you can still come in as a candidate, as a prospect, as someone who's just interested in working there, even when there aren't any jobs, and you can make an impression that makes people think of you when something comes up. And it's not that common, really, to meet someone who makes that impression. So if you have the opportunity to go in, and John Prine, the country singer, has, this is really uncool. I love John Prine. Ain't no shame. But he's very much not a jazz artist, though. But he has this phrase in a song that he uses. It's in the context of, like, he's talking about how music journalists who don't like his music, he's talking about having a drink with them, and he says, I'll smother them with my charm. And I love that idea. If you can make your personality and your appeal, like, inescapable, you know, and I'm not talking about being overbearing or anything like that, but if you can show people not just that you'd be a great person to work with, but that you really, really want to work there. Like, even if you go, I mean, for example, the BBC is like, I think in many ways, it's almost like this impenetrable fortress, or at least it seems that way for a lot of people who want to work there. But if you go into the BBC and you spend some time there and you walk around people at their desks, the people working there aren't like popping party poppers and like having the best day of their lives every day they're in there. There's a lot of jaded people in these companies doing these jobs. And actually, it's really nice when someone comes into that environment and they really, really want to work there, you know, and it's not about money or ego or anything like that. They just really want to work at your company. I think that kind of is applicable across the board. Like, you're guaranteed to impress people and make an impression.
Definitely. And again, we mentioned it right at the very start, didn't we? We spoke about your energy, like the energy, and it's not how energetic you are, but you know, it's what you're putting out there, basically. You know, are you super helpful, really friendly, do a good job, also keen to help other people? You're talking to people, you're making connections. When you were saying that thing about, you know, definitely not being overbearing, but do follow up on the emails. I get emails all the time. People send one email, like candidates looking to start out, and then that's it. They never send me another email again because I don't respond to them. There are, at the moment, 2,711 emails sat in my inbox. There is no way on the face of this planet that I'm actually going to be able to get back to everyone. But the people who you end up speaking to are the people who are super polite and but follow up, you know, because they 100%. Want it. Like, they absolutely want it.
Yeah. Amazing. And I also think that speaks to what we were talking about before about positivity and optimism. The people who send you one email, there's a little nugget in that of, you know, the people who don't follow up don't really believe that they're going to get this job or they're not going to get a good outcome from it. And it's almost like, I'm going to send this email and there's my work done. I've sent the email. If I don't hear back, you know, then that's the universe telling me this isn't right. Whereas if you start off with the belief that, like, I'm going to make this happen one way or another, of course you're going to chase up because you're like, oh, that's weird. Like, so-and-so didn't respond to my email. Let me just chase this up and make sure, you know, she saw it.
Yeah. And I think as well, you know, it's the mindset that you put yourself in. I found, I can't remember if I've talked about it on the podcast before or not, but I know I mentioned it somewhere recently. When I was going through my personal inbox, which also has somewhere near 9,000 emails in it, giving you palpitations, just thinking about it. I found an email. No, they're mainly, you know, junk from ASOS. I found an email that I'd sent to the NME in 2004 asking to do work experience there. I have wanted to write for as long as I can remember. My nan bought me a typewriter when I was about 8 to try and encourage me to follow that dream. She also bought me a guitar when I was 16 to help me follow that dream. So poor old May, she never saw me achieve my potential. But yeah, I wanted to be a journalist. I loved music. I wanted to be a music journalist. I wanted to write. And I remember, or I didn't remember, but I found this email in my personal email account not that long ago from 2004, writing to the NME saying, I'd love to be a music journalist because I can't think of anything better than a job where I was out of gigs every night. There's so many things wrong with my particular approach to that. But it was an email that I sent once. I never followed up. I didn't really attach a CV. I didn't tell them what I could do. I didn't send them a sample of me writing about something. I'd done nothing. It was just a bit of a, you know, shot in the dark of like, hey, I think I like to do this. But there was no evidence that I had any skills, experience, or knowledge to be able to do that. So I guess what I'm trying to say is absolutely should follow up, because it's the people that want it that follow up. And I didn't, I think I probably didn't believe in myself. I didn't think I belonged in those places, which is why I probably didn't follow up as well. So
yeah. That's a big part of it. I mean, in terms of radio and stuff, I remember listening to an interview with Annie Mack. And I think this is a big thing as well. She was saying, like, don't wait for people to notice you. And this is Annie Mack talking, a brilliant broadcaster, you know, who you would think would just be sitting there and one day someone would come along and say, hey, you're great, you want a job. Doesn't work that way. You have to spoon feed yourself to people, you know. And I think that's a lot of it too. It's almost like you send the email out and you're like, oh, well, you know, if they thought I was good enough, then they would offer me this job or offer me this work experience. But obviously, like, I'm going to have to wait for the next thing to come along because they haven't noticed me. It doesn't work like that. You have to get in people's faces and make them realize in a polite, charming way.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. Well, look, the next question I wanted to ask you was actually about the biggest challenge you've faced to date. But I wonder if this is a good point to bring back in the topic of mental health, if you're comfortable. It's entirely up to you how much depth you want to go into. You want to talk us through the mental health challenges that you had?
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, it just seems like a totally different life. But I think I was just crap in school. I was just rubbish in school. I was never academic. I really liked music and I did well in music and I got good grades and stuff. And so I thought, this is the route that I have to follow. I was obviously born in Ireland, in Dublin. I took a year out and then I wanted to move to London. And I thought the only way to do that was to go to university. And that seemed like the best possible way of continuing with music. And, you know, I'm trying to counteract this kind of just complete lack of enthusiasm and aptitude for academia. Looking back, it seems ridiculous that I chose to go to university. But, you know, I thought like, oh, well, I'm smart. I'm probably just lazy. Let me just go to uni and I'll try and sort my life out. And I just hated it. It was interesting, but I just didn't have the academic know-how or the enthusiasm for it to continue. And I probably had, as I think a lot of, you know, sensitive kids do, I think I probably had a touch of depression, anxiety anyway. And when I got to uni and realized I wasn't magically going to become academic, I think I just got really down. And then I was like, what am I going to do with my life? And I stopped going to lectures and I just kind of opted out, really. And I just couldn't face the idea of going back. I was broke. And it was just, I remember emailing the admin team at the uni just to be like, what do I do if I want to drop out? They were like, what? Why would you want to do that? I think I'd finished a year and a half. And so I just didn't. I stopped communicating with them. I had to get a job because I had no income. So I just started doing some admin job and sort of slowly got myself out of it. I went to see a doctor. I think I was on antidepressants briefly. And then I guess this was a couple of years later. I was still kind of lost in terms of my career, what I wanted to do, and just in terms of my life. And I decided to see if I could find a therapist. And I found this counselor who is just like the absolute light of my life. Like, just every shred of self-belief that I have probably came from my relationship with her. And like, I still talk to her now. This is going on, I don't know, 12, 13 years. So I'm so glad that I did that for myself, that I knew there was something that I needed to be doing. I didn't know what it was, and I needed someone to help me figure it out. And so that's how I sort of got to the bottom of that. It's funny because framing it as a challenge, obviously it was a horrible time in my life, and I wouldn't wish depression or mental health issues like that on anyone. And I'm very glad I came through it. But like, I'm so grateful that I met this therapist who was able to just help me reframe things completely.
It's so important, isn't it? I've done therapy. I'm on my third set of therapy now. And I think it just really helps to, when you're in your own head, obviously, as we all are, it's really difficult to unpick it because all you know, the only way your brain operates is the way your brain's always operated. So it does often take an external force, an outsider, you know, beyond friends and family sometimes, to actually help you work it all out and break it all down. Much like everything else we have spoken about today, it's taking small, tangible pieces that leads you to the big changes as well. It's so important. Our mental health exists on a spectrum, doesn't it? It's like a 10 being incredible, fantastic, feeling wonderful, and zero being very, very in a desperate situation. And we will all be on that spectrum at various different points all the time. I know if I'm somewhere around a 7, I've done really, really, really well. I don't know that I've ever been at an 8, 9 or a 10. But sometimes when I feel myself hitting a 5, I'm like, I know I need to do something to change this because I'm about to be not very well. So yeah, and it is about that balance, isn't it? But having someone to talk to and people talking about their mental health is something that is a matter very, very close to my heart. So thank you so much for sharing that with us. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. Two kind of quick ones. The first one, which is what do you wish you'd known when you started out? And the second one being, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
I'm so happy with where I am now and where things are going. And I still feel optimistic about stuff that's going to happen. So it's really difficult for me to go back and sort of feel like I would want to change anything or know anything. I think I probably worked way too hard during that first while. And when I look back, I mean, pre-lockdown, I was just completely wearing myself into the ground, just DJing all the time, saying yes to every gig. I think I still had this hangover from when I was at school that I was this lazy person. And so any work that came up, and this is a trap that I think a lot of freelance people fall into, I was just saying yes to everything. And actually, just going back to the decision I made when I first went freelance, it's more important, I think, a lot of the time to be time rich than money rich. Time counts for a lot more. And lockdown has been a huge lesson in just pulling back and not saying yes to so much work. Because at the end of the day, I mean, another reason why I decided to go freelance is because I wanted to have a fun life. I wanted my life to be fun. You know, I don't think there's any shame in that. And it was getting to the point where I was just doing too much and it wasn't fun. So I probably have a word with myself and say, you know, do you really need that extra, however much it is? I probably would have told myself to pull back. And I probably would have also told myself that everything's going to be okay. Because at the time when you're in it, sometimes you don't necessarily, as optimistic as you can be, you have moments where you don't necessarily have assurance of that. So yeah.
Amazing. Fantastic. And I regularly do that. I'll ring friends and actually, or family. I'll share like a massive problem with them that I'm having. And they'll be desperately trying to give you a solution. And I'm just like, I don't need your solution. I just need you to tell me it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and this is the thing, like, if you look back at like little dramas or things that were happening, like I remember when I think back at like, oh my God, you know, this gig that I lost or this 1 month that I had where I didn't earn enough money and then the repercussions of that financially. I don't care about any of that now. At the time, it was keeping me awake at night. And now I look at it and I'm just like, wow, that didn't matter at all in the grand scheme of things. So that's a useful exercise to do, actually.
It's perspective, isn't it? Another P, another fabulous P. Must add that to the list. Okay, and then what's the best advice you've ever been given?
This is like a probably a controversial one. But it's helped me, probably in different contexts to the one it was originally meant. I was trying to buy a house when I was in my mid-20s and I didn't know how I was going to do it. And someone said to me, if you want something badly enough, you'll find the money, which in and of itself is probably very irresponsible advice. But it really helped me to see that, like, I think a lot of people attach a moral value to money and how much money you're earning and, you know, use money as a complete measure of success. It's easy to do that because it's a quantifiable thing. But just getting that message from that person made me think, like, money doesn't have to be a factor in everything. You know, obviously you need it to live and you need it to survive, and money is really important and it's miserable if you don't have it. And we've all been through times like that in our lives. But the idea that you have to say yes or no to something depending on how much money is attached to it, it's just not a satisfying way to go through your career and through your life. So I think separating those two things has been a really helpful thing for me.
I think we could have changed one of your P's to prioritizing, because that's what it's about, isn't it? It's prioritizing what's important to you and why, and it's creating the boundaries and it's getting the balance. Amazing. Fantastic. Thank you so much. My final question is, what would you like to change in the music business?
Oh, so many things. It's a real fortress sometimes. Speaking about my industry specifically, I think it's nice that making contacts is a good way to get ahead in radio and also with DJing. But there's the flip side of that is that if you're not part of someone's network, it doesn't matter how talented you are, you won't be allowed into the castle. And so if you are a person who's good at networking and, you know, if you're someone who's able to make a good impression, like the first time you meet someone or whatever, like, then that's a really good boon for you. But I often think that you see people placed into roles or given opportunities, and it seems very much to do with the fact that they know the right people or someone owes them a favor, which is nice when you're the one who's owed a favor, but it does annoy me when talented people get overlooked. So that's something that I'd change.
Yeah, definitely. I'm with you on that. Okay, it's time for my favorite bit of the show. So each episode we ask our amazing producer Kiani if there's anything he'd like to ask our guests, as he is in the early stages of his career. And obviously I love to encourage people to ask questions, so I'm all about creating those opportunities. This is the bit we call Kiani's Question Corner.
Thanks for that, Sylves. Okay, so I just want to say, before we go into my questions that I have, I do want to say, like, it takes so much courage to even talk about, like, what you've been through mentally and, you know, finding a therapist and so on and so forth. I literally acknowledge that. And I just support that because I feel like how you do one thing is how you do everything. So you'll definitely get to where you need to be for sure. I didn't really plan any questions, but I am going to go with my heart from what I've heard today. And I was going to say, the fact you said that you and your partner do business meetings, it's almost like vision boarding, which I find so important in this day and age. So for anyone that's listening that don't know how to do it, would you obviously tell them how you do it so that they can source inspiration from that? That's my first question.
Oh, thank you, Kiani. It's nice to hear your voice and thank you for your encouragement and your question, which I hope I can answer coherently. I mean, pizza is fundamental at business meetings, I'll say that much, particularly if you're doing them with your partner. That's just a no-brainer. It's really important to, like, set a whole day or an afternoon aside to really do it. It can't just be a casual conversation. And to keep notes as well, because I mean, this is how we did it, you know, in our case, like, we wanted to always reference back to the notes we made at the last meeting, really romantic. So we always made sure that we kept really good notes. I suppose the main approach would be to, in my example, I mean, Sylve called it a portfolio career. There are lots of different things that I am and was interested in doing. So there would be a number of different headings on my list. And under each heading, I would think about where I wanted to ultimately be, ultimately and, you know, realistically to a certain extent as well. And I would just work backwards from there. So put a subheading under each heading. Think about all the things you want to achieve underneath that one heading. So for example, say with radio, I decided I wanted to work for Jazz FM. So, you know, I thought about my bullet points, what I would need to do, make a demo, make sure the demo was really good, get people to listen to it. I would need to get contacts at Jazz FM or figure out who to speak to, you know, XYZ, everything I could think of that I could do to help me to get there. And you just break it down and break it down to manageable points. And that means that every day you can get up and look at that list and tick one or two things off the list, and you're making slow, manageable strides towards where you want to get to.
My second question for you, Anne, was we spoke briefly about the moment you felt like you just kind of needed to jump off the cliff and just go for what you wanted to go for. I feel like a lot of people that I know and people that's going to be potentially listening to this podcast, they're probably in a space where they're doing something they don't want to do. So what did you tell yourself, or what did you gather together so that you could jump off? Let's just say you have your jump off the cliff moment and it worked for you. So what did you tell yourself so that someone who's listening, or even people like that I know who listen to this podcast, could help themselves?
Loads of things. You know, something that's really helpful that I often find in situations like that is just to say, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, I fail and I have to get another job. Oh, well, you know, people talk about, oh, well, there's a gap in my CV and blah, blah, blah. None of that stuff matters. Anything you do that is challenging yourself to that extent is going to be so valuable, whatever it is you do next. If your freelance career works out, if it works out in a different way to how you imagined it to, or even if you decide it's not for you and you want to go back to full-time work, everything you learn during that period will serve you well. So I think that's a really important thing. I surrounded myself with, or I made sure that I spoke to people who had already done it. So I had a friend who was running a record label. I had all these different people in my life who had made a similar decision and were kind of further along. And I was able to get a realistic idea of what it was going to be like from them. And also that grit and determination and just having something in you that's like, I deserve this. There's no other people do this. I remember my boyfriend saying to me before I'd started properly working in radio, he was like, the BBC car park is full of cars. People work at the BBC. Like, it's not like winning the lottery. Other people do it. Like, why shouldn't you be able to do it? And I was like, oh yeah. Thinking realistically about the fact that, like, why shouldn't it be you doing this thing? And also, I remember when I was leaving my last full-time job, the CEO, who I really got on well with and really liked, who Silv knows too, we sat down for a meeting and I said, listen, I'm going to jack this in. I want to go and pursue DJing, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, yeah, I always think, like, what if you have a dream and you think about this dream and it's like something you daydream about and it's something you always picture yourself doing, and then you go for it and it doesn't work out. Like, what do you do then? And I was just like, ah, oh, that just makes me want to succeed so hard just so I can show you. So I think that was really a test, I think, of my own self-belief. When he said that to me, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this twice and succeed both times. So yeah, I think really thinking about why you wanted and falling back on that little nugget of self-belief, I think, is so important too.
I was going to say, Anne, it sounds like your biggest motivator is the fuck you moment.
Like, I'm all about
you. I can do that.
Oh God. Yeah. Nothing is more motivating to me than someone being patronizing or trivializing what you're trying to do, or just straight up making out like you're not going to be able to do it. I just think back, although it hurts when people do that, like, those are the moments in my life that I look back on and I'm like, wow, that just properly gave me another little energy burst to move forward. Don't underestimate how powerful it can be when someone tells you you can't.
We can rephrase that now. So if anyone ever hears us talking about FYMs, that's what we're talking about.
I love that.
I was going to say that is great advice. And like, I think that's a mantra that I think everyone should live by as well. Like, what's there to lose if it doesn't work out? And yeah, that's inspiring. Like, I like that. Keep it up.
Thanks, Kiani. Well, you too.
Back to yourself.
Amazing. Fantastic. Thank you so much. So each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. So Anne, tell us who you've picked and why.
I've picked a little charity based in London called London Inner City Kiddies, or LIC. I am a huge animal person, and LIC is run entirely by volunteers. I've fostered cats for them before. Essentially, they look after stray cats, street cats, abandoned cats. They do it all not for profit. and they just do amazing work. The experiences that I've had working with them and fostering have just been amazing. I've met some amazing cats. And I just think because they're such a small charity, they will really feel and appreciate this donation. So thank you so much for making that on my behalf or on your behalf. I appreciate it.
You're very, very welcome. Anyone who follows Anne on Instagram will know she is a mad cat lady. I'm a mad dog lady, though. So it's weird that we get on.
Well, you do have the cutest dog in the world. I make concessions for that.
This is very true. This is very true. Amazing. Thank you so much, Anne. We really appreciate that. Well, look, I just want to say a massive thank you, actually, for joining us. And it's been, we knew it would be a pleasure, a joy, and an absolute delight to see your face and hear your voice again and have you on the pod again, this time as a guest. And obviously, I felt a little bit scared because, like I said, you taught me everything I know about podcasts. So I very, 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 very much appreciate that. I appreciate you being on the pod. And I feel like your P's should have been something entirely different. I feel like your P's should have been purpose, priorities, and planning, because we had some real, tangible, and fantastic tips. I appreciate you, Anne Frankenstein.
You are a wonderful human. Sylvia, you work far too hard. I hope that's something that you've learned from this conversation. But it's such a joy to talk to you. And thank you so much for doing this podcast. I just think it's a really wonderful thing. And you had no need to be nervous. You smothered me with your charm, Sylvia. If anyone knows how to do that, it's you.
Right. Nice one. Thank you so much to Anne. That was really inspirational and insightful. And I really enjoyed that conversation, despite the fact that I was slightly nervous having Anne back here watching me doing the interviewing. But she was great, wasn't she? So that's it for another episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow the BIY Pod. And you can follow us on our socials as well. We're at biy.people.and.talent on Instagram. And if you're just starting out in the music business, check out our Future Talent Facebook page, which is BIY Future Talent. And for anyone who's already on their music business career path, it's BIY Peoples. And a big thank you to Kiani Kerr and Danny Roberts, our production team on the BIY Pod. And we will see you all again soon. Thanks, guys. This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.